This morning, I'm going to go old school on you. I'm not talking about truth or TikTok or trust. But I'm talking about, this is something that ministers have a love-hate relationship with. It's something we need to talk about, but usually strikes fear and discomfort in the hearts of the congregants. If you haven't guessed by now, what I'm talking about is dong tie. Oh my God, no. So, you know, money, talking about money in church usually makes people uncomfortable. Usually people's relationship with money in church is, okay, keep the lights on, pay the minister's salary, that's it. Right? But this morning I want to talk about tithing as a real spiritual practice that leads us to our full expression of our divine nature, to our full expression of God. And it's something that really is necessary because our relationship with God and money are so tied together. We'll talk about that soon too. And you know, I stand before you today not as a shining example of tithing. I've tried tithing many times in my life and start and I stop, or I get lost, or I get too complicated and I just give up on it. But they say that preachers preach what they need to know. So here we go. I'm going to start with a little tithing humor, okay? There are two guys trapped on a desert island. One of them is just pacing back and forth. He's scared to death. We're never going to get rescued. We're going to be here the rest of our lives. He's just panicked. The other guy's sitting over there just cool as a cucumber. He's chill. And the first guy goes, What's wrong with you? Aren't you afraid we're going to never get rescued and die on this island? The second guy goes, you know, I make $10,000 a week, and I tithe faithfully to my church. My pastor will find me. Ba-dum-bum. Okay. Well, you know how that is. Pastors will find you. So last Wednesday, I started a great class based on Edwin Gaines' book, The Four Spiritual Laws of Prosperity. A Simple Guide to Unlimited Abundance, a great title, and we had a great class Wednesday. And Wednesday we talked about tithing, and Edwin's approach to tithing was so simple and so profound that it kind of lit a fire under me to give this a try again. So I wanted to kind of bring it to you and share this with you. So from Edwin's book, you know, we know that prosperity is not just money, but here's Edwin Gaines' definition of true prosperity. The first is a vitally alive physical body. Next, relationships that are satisfying, nurturing, honest, and work all the time. Three, work that you love so much that it's not work, it's play. I've got that one covered because whenever I work, I even call it play. And all the money you can spend. So these are the four things that have to be working in your life in order for you to experience true prosperity. And Edwin proposes getting there through these four spiritual laws. So the first one, you must set clear and tangible goals. These aren't necessarily in order because we did do tithing the first week. But you must set clear and tangible goals for yourself. So you have to be clear with what you want with the universe. You have to set dates and be very specific in your goals. You must seek to discover and follow your divine purpose. So if you know what your divine purpose is, that gives you the guide to how to set your goals and where to use the power and energy of the money that comes into you. Number three, you must forgive everyone all the time, especially yourself. What does forgiveness have to do with prosperity? Well, that'll be our class two next week. But forgiveness is very important. In one of the scriptures, it says, "Forgiven, you shall be forgiven. Give, and it will be given back to you." They put them in there side by side. Forgiveness comes first, then given, it's given back to you. And finally, in order to achieve full prosperity, you must tithe 10% of all that you receive, 10% of all that comes into you to where you receive your spiritual food. Now, Edwin is very clear that you have to do all four of these, all four of them. Now, you might know somebody who doesn't tithe but still is rich. So they may have mastered money, but maybe they still have forgiveness work to do or work in their relationships to do. Or, you may have somebody that's done all their forgiveness work, but it's still not demonstrating prosperity. All four of those laws have to be working in your life in order for you to demonstrate the true prosperity and unlimited abundance. So here are some of the key ideas I took from this chapter on tithing from Ed Wein. The first thing, very profound, money is a means to an end and not the end itself. Okay, so what is the end? The end is our full expression of our divine nature. So we think of money as a tool to get there. It's not that you can buy enlightenment or anything, but that you can use money to serve that purpose. This is why it's so important to know what your divine purpose is, so that you can use money as a tool to get there. Ed Wein says, I serve God and money serves me. Simply having money is not the goal. The goal is to use it to do whatever your heart leads you to do, and to do that which fulfills your divine purpose. So all of this is taking a little bit of the emphasis off of the importance of money, for us to be able to put God first in our life as our main source for everything. Second, tithing is all about faith. In fact, it says tithing is about having faith. I should add an all. Tithing is all about having faith. You must have faith if you're going to trust God as your source, first and foremost. Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore says, this is fun, as soon as you start tithing, your faith is increased 100-fold. As soon as you start tithing, our faith increases 100-fold. And it's faith that allows you to give without worrying about lack or without worrying about not having enough. Let's see. Oh, the Christ in you is not glorified by poverty. Okay, so the paradigm through which a lot of that still exists around traditional churches is that poverty is somehow a virtue among Christians. And it comes from misinterpretation of the scriptures, like it's easier for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. Or when Jesus tells the rich man, if he wants to follow me, to sell all of his possessions to follow me, or the love of money is the root of all evil. These scriptures have rooted this belief in Christianity that poverty is a virtue and something to be embraced. But the truth is, Jesus was not poor. Okay, even though he didn't carry money around, he was demonstrating this very teaching that we're talking about today. Jesus had 100% total faith in God. He put God first in everything. He never carried money, yet all his needs were met. And he also wore a very, very expensive, seamless garment. So we know that Jesus was not considered a poor man, and he was very well taken care of. So the Christ is not glorified through poverty. I think we all know that in our being. You know, we may want to use it as an excuse. I'm poor, I'm a good Christian. But the Christ in us is not glorified. It's glorified when you stand up and acknowledge who you are, claim your true identity, a divine being, a child of the Most High, and a person who deserves every good thing that life has to offer you. That's what glorifies the Christ into the world. And finally, the old verse. This is the poster child verse for tithing in the Bible, Malachi 3:10, which invites you to prove God. And I love it. So here it is. I know, Malachi is the last book of the Old Testament. And they say that this is the book that foretells the coming of the Messiah. This is why it's the last book of the Bible. By the way, Malachi is not a proper name. Malachi means angel or messenger. The Bible scholars don't believe there was a person named Malachi, but that this book is written anonymously. So here it is. We all know this. We've all heard it. Bring the full tithe into the storehouse so that there may be food in my house, and prove me now, says the Lord, and see if I will not open the windows of heaven for you and pour down for you an overflowing blessing. Prove me now. It's the only place in the Bible where we are asked to prove God. And that three words in itself is a powerful challenge of faith. And when it says prove me now, we're really talking about proving the law of giving and receiving, the universal law of giving and receiving. It's a law just like gravity. It's a law that operates the universe. It's what keeps the universe in balance, this law of giving and receiving. Prove me now. Prove that law now. So you might think, God does not need my money. And of course, you're right. God does not need your money. But you, my friend, you need to give. We all need to give. And also, hold on to your seats. It's not your money. It's not your money in the first place. If I have faith that God and only God is my source, then in reality, it is not my money. So giving 10% of something that isn't mine in the first place, back to where it came from, and keeping the rest is a pretty sweet deal when you think about it. Jesus did not teach tithing, actually, and the reason was because tithing was kind of a given in those days. It was part of the everyday spiritual practice of the Jewish people. However, Jesus did talk a lot about money. He talked about money more than faith, more than prayer. The only thing he talked more about was the kingdom of heaven. And in fact, a lot of his teachings on the kingdom of heaven dealt with money. Remember the parable of the pearl of great price? You give that up to acquire the kingdom. You cannot serve two masters, God and money. The love of money is the root of all evil. There's the parable of the talents. There's the parable of Lazarus and the rich man. The New Testament goes on and on about examples of Jesus teaching us our relationship with money. Because the root of every one of these lessons, if we take them apart, unpack them, the root of every lesson about money that Jesus taught us was to put God first. Was to put God first and all else will be added unto you. Okay? Jesus knew that our love of money and our attachment to our money was the greatest obstacle to experiencing the kingdom. You know, he knew that money, of course, was a necessary tool, but he stressed not making it more important than our faith in God, not making money more important than our relationship to God. Remember, he said, don't worry about what you eat or what you drink. Consider the lilies of the field. Don't store up treasures on earth, because they'll only rust. Store your treasures up in heaven in consciousness. And one way he helped to get that point across to the people of his time and to us today now is to give. To give. Giving away your money to help others was a way to take their minds off of their own poverty and onto doing God's work in the world. And also giving, I don't know about you, but I feel rich when I'm able to give. I just feel so much richer that I have something to give away to where I am spiritually fed. And it was very important for the people of that time to feel richer than they were. And whenever they would do what Jesus says and give to a widow or to the temple, they were feeling a little bit richer. And this was a huge boost in their consciousness of the people of that time. And it still works to this very day. Paul agrees. He writes in 2 Corinthians 9:8, God is able to provide you with every blessing in abundance, so that by always having enough of everything, you may share abundantly in every good work. So Paul here is even telling us that God will supply you with every blessing in order that you may share it abundantly in every good work. So it's the law of giving and receiving back and forth there from Paul. All right, so in order to fulfill this promise in Malachi and really develop a solid, consistent practice of tithing, there are four things. Okay, we're really working at number four this week. There are four things that generally stand in our way. At least these are four things that stand in my way. I resonate with all of these. Okay, the first thing, big one, the fear of not enough. Now, I'm afraid that if I give to God before I pay my bills, I'm going to come up short. I don't have the faith that God will provide. So I tend to hold back my giving until I know my bills are covered. But tithing is a demonstration of our faith in God as our true source of our supply. By tithing, we're strengthening our faith 100-fold. This means to tithe first before you pay your bills, even before you buy food. When it comes in, tithe on it. See, the universe cannot send abundance into the face of fear. The universe cannot create abundance where there's no faith, in a vacuum of faith. And our fear of not enough is essentially slamming the door on the face of your abundance. Those windows that open up, you've got them locked when you have fear of not enough. Next thing, the belief in lack. It's easy to say, I don't believe in lack. I know in the highest realm there is no lack. But sometimes, it sneaks up on me personally. And this is what creates our fear of not enough. Our belief in lack is what creates that fear of not enough. And you know what? I can honestly look back on my life, my whole 60 years, and know that there's been very, very few times when I actually experienced any kind of lack in my life. Yet I took those experiences and I created a belief to support them. You know, that's what beliefs are. Beliefs are like a stereotype. They'll take one little isolated incident and then superimposes it onto your entire life. So a belief in lack, if you look over your life too, and I hope that's what comes up for you, that you might have seen very little lack, yet you still created a belief around lack to support that. So when it comes up for me, I use denials. Thank God for unity and new thought for affirmations and denials. I use denials to deny the power that any belief in lack has over me and my finances. And then I use affirmations to affirm the truth that all of my life and all of my good comes from one source, the divine. Think of a single payer system in our health care. Not that I'm supporting that, just as an example. Okay, and third, discipline. So, those who know me know that this is not one of my strong points. Finding a system of giving that works for me is the most important key to tithing. And as I look back, I see that that is where I tripped up most. I tend to be a little lazy, okay? So tithing means I have to keep track of every penny that comes into my life. I have to record it somewhere, and then I add it up, and all at the end of each month, and I either pay it out weekly or bi-monthly. I decide who I'm tithing to. I write a check or transfer money or give cash. It just became like complicated for me, and it was a discipline I couldn't keep up with. But now Ed Wein's system is very simple, and I think I can handle this, and I'm going to try it. She tithes as soon as possible after she receives. She goes, the sooner you tithe, the sooner you get your good back. So it makes sense to me, because if you want to exercise that giving muscle, you know, because we really have to get into the habit of giving, then tithing as money comes into you really gives you more opportunities to practice giving. And, my text to give is a great tool for that. So $100 comes in, I just pull my phone out, and I punch in a 10, hit send, and the tithe, it's done. Some folks love the physical action, the visceral action of writing checks, writing in a positive note in the foreline, and that's great. So you can add it up all month, write a check at the end of the month, find a system that works for you, and stick to it, which brings us to number four, stick to it, consistency. All right, so consistency is different from discipline. Okay, like, I can be disciplined in how I and when I tithe, but then I do it for 2 or 3 months, and if I'm not a millionaire, I quit. You know, if nothing happens, then I kind of give up. I don't have the consistency. I have to keep it up. Now, Edwin's example, she gave for 6 months in her first attempt to tithe. And she says that for the first couple months, 2 or 3 months, she didn't see much of an increase in income. Yet, she was still able to meet her bills. Even as she was tithing, she was still able to meet her bills. And even as she was tithing, she still did not experience the lack. So we could reason that her income actually had increased by 10% those first couple months that covered what she was tithing. So notice when you start tithing, if you're still meeting your bills, then you have experienced an increase. All you have to do is really stick to it, okay? They say it takes 21 days to establish a habit, so I'm committing to tithing 10% of everything that comes into me. Edwin says, if I find a dime on the sidewalk, I'm taking 10% of that and giving it to where I'm spiritually fed. And at least for the next 21 days to maybe establish a habit of tithing and giving, but be patient and stay with it at least 3 or 4 months to get those wheels rolling. Remember, you're undoing a lifetime of embedded beliefs and habits. So give it some time, be patient, and be persistent. Now, once you're on track with your giving, the next thing you're going to need to do is prepare yourself to receive. Whoops, okay, we don't need this yet. You're going to need to prepare yourself to receive because it's going to start coming in. And I'm going to read something that Edwin says concerning receiving. You have to have the courage to claim that which is yours. Dare to claim the good that God wants for you. One way is through affirmations, and one of my favorites is, I have a wonderful gifts to receive, and I receive them joyously. Try saying that out loud every time you start to feel nervous about all the new abundance that's appearing in your life. Believe it or not, there's a real fear of receiving that a lot of us have. And a lot of times somebody wants to give you a gift. Oh, no, 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 thank you. Accept it. You accept it for yourself, and you're accepting it to support that person in their spiritual practice of giving. So preparing yourself to receive. You know, our self-worth will come into play in almost every decision we make in our life. Being able to accept your good, she uses the two words, dare to claim your good and have the courage to claim your good. Accepting our good is a real testament to a healthy self-esteem, being able to say yes to your good. So I'm going to close today with a little levity on tithing. Since I made you listen to a whole talk about it, I want to play this fun video from the Skit Guys. It's called The Skinny on Tithing. So here's your reward for listening to a talk on money today, The Skinny on Tithing.
I give to God by enjoying what He has given me. Okay? I mean, do you really think He expects something back? Now, I know there's a lot of people at church that would not understand this line of reasoning. That's why, just to make things simple and not to cause any controversy, I like to carry what I call the little empty envelope, all right? You see, when the plate gets passed, I bloop, put it in there like that. The deacon's counting the money. They only know me as the crazy empty envelope guy, but the people sitting around me, clueless. I win, they win, God wins. No one gets hurt because no one knows.
God knows.
Huh? Let me ask you a question, huh? How's your mutual fund?
Hey, for that matter, how's all your funds? Has the fund left your funds, huh? Has your do-re-mi taken a W-A-L-K, huh?
What if I told you that I knew about an investment you could make that the return would be mind-boggling? And it's promised, it's guaranteed.
I know what you're saying, there's no guarantees. This one's guaranteed, okay?
Malachi 3:10, that's what it says in the Old Testament. It says, test me, give to God, and He will give you back. It goes like this, I give this, He gives this. I give this, He gives this. I give this, right up there. He keeps giving. I can't outgive God. How crazy is that? Do I love Him? Sure, whatever. I'm just saying, if you give, He gives back.
I tithe, but just not like in the form of a 10% check per se. Let me tell you what I mean. When I go to church on a Sunday morning, they're selling donuts, I buy some, boom, that's a tithe. When my whole Sunday school class wants donuts, and I, out of the goodness of my heart, buy a whole bunch for the Sunday school class, boom, that's another tithe. But it's not about me spending money. It's about the smile on people's faces. That, my friends, is tithe enough for me. Case in point, the church was having date nights where we could take our spouse out for an evening, and they were charging $25 for childcare. Boom shakalaka tithe. I'll tell you what the biggest tithe was. When I spent over $100 on our meal, and my wife was grinning ear to ear, that, my friend's a tithe.
I would like to give. I would, okay? But everything right now is just crazy. I mean, just crazy, you know? I mean, not normal crazy, really crazy, you know? And if after I paid my bills and took care of the things that I need and want, then I would consider giving something. But Not now is crazy. We're going to give later. We've already talked about it. I mean, down the road, we'll be crazy givers. But right now, it's just crazy.
Yeah, I have money. That's a fact. But you know what? It's a heart thing between me and the Lord and the pastor, because he needs to know what I'm giving now that we have this little building campaign going on, if you know what I'm saying. And pastor, I'd give a little bit more. I'd give a little something if you'd have that music minister sing a couple more hymns now and then, huh? Hey, watch this. Watch this. Is that a Benjamin? I think it is. Benji likes hymns. Come on. You want it? Come on, pastor. Do what I say, huh?
Oh, in my life, Lord, be glorified in me. I put money in the plate. Wait, wait, wait. Look what I have here. I hope it doesn't interfere. That everyone can hear how I give with cheer, that everyone could be like me.
Jazz hands.
Did y'all do the jazz hands? Great. Funny stuff. So before I close, I want to tell you that my talk is called As You Give, and the rest of it is So Shall You Receive. And I chose it because the scripture illustrates how we are totally in charge of our receiving. It's us that's in charge of our receiving. If you want to receive more, give more. As you give, so you receive. Edwin says, if you're on a fixed income, it's because you fixed it. And if you can unfix it anytime, by raising your level of giving. So the title I began with for this talk, Paula felt a little uncomfortable with it, was Love Offering Required. Love offering is required today. I'm going to ask all of you listening, all of you watching, to give something today. I don't care whatever it is, large or minuscule, not because Unity Renaissance needs your gift, but because you need to give in order to receive. I found this great quote from Ernest Holmes that says it so beautifully. Everything in nature moves in circles. What goes out must come back. We do not give because God needs the gift, but because the giving increases, broadens, and deepens the life of the giver. So think of tithing mainly just as organized giving to where you receive your spiritual food. And if you still have any fear or trepidation around tithing, just follow the gospel of Nike and just do it. Let's prepare for our meditation now. So as we take a few breaths, clear our minds, and for just a few moments, to settle into the knowing of that one great truth, that God is all there is. God is the air we breathe, the earth we walk upon, the chair we sit in. God is every person we know and encounter. God is the energy of our consciousness, the source of divine ideas, the inspiration. God is the energy that connects us over the miles and that is connecting us now. Wherever you are, God is, so all must be well. And if God is everywhere present, how can there be lack anywhere? The only lack that truly exists is the beliefs that we hold around it. So let's release them now. Any lack in belief, any of these, oh, sure, but, that might come to your mind, release that. And bring your attention into this now, ever-present moment. The now moment is the only moment where God exists. And therefore, it's the only moment from which we can draw our abundance. with our attention firmly planted right here and right now, focused only on what's going on around you, what you're hearing, what your senses are telling you in this now moment, with literally the entire universe at your fingertips here and now. As we enter into our time of silence, just allow yourself to feel the love of the universe. The universe that conspires to ensure your happiness. A universe that is desiring to open the doors of the kingdom and pour out to you a blessing so great you will not be able to contain it. Hold that thought as we enter into the silence. For all the abundance that we see around us, the abundance in our lives, the abundance in the world we live in, we know that God is our one and only source. The universe provides for us everything we need. None of this really belongs to us. Money comes through us to pass along. Our gifts are given to pass on. We are stewards of God's abundance. For this we give thanks. We move forward today with great faith that as we begin to give of our resources, the universe will provide even more to support that giving. For this we give thanks. We're in agreement. And so in agreement we say, together and so it is, together and so it is.